And good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair for our weekly time together. And I have to begin the program by telling everybody that if you are among the literally thousands who depend on our being able to archive programs, that last week there was some sort of a gap, a hole in the side of the ship. Let's put it that way. A hole in the side of the ship, the good ship Voice of Bashan. And the hole was the connection between the microphone and the panel, which I have the capability of screwing up on a weekly basis, and the computer, from which it then goes to the archive. And so during the day last Tuesday, a craftsman and technician of incredible skill reported aboard and shored up that hole, remade the connection. And so insofar as I'm able to promise anything over which I do not have direct command and control myself, I am promising that very shortly after this broadcast and after Susan does the electronic magic that she does on my behalf, that this will be up on the archive. And if you are one of those in Stockholm or in Singapore or all of the ships at sea and all of the aircraft in the air and all of the stations in between who listen to your captain on Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band and streaming live all over those places and probably many more as well on voiceofvashon.org. So you should be able to go into the archive. And if you live in one of those places where you are resting your eyes during the time of my live broadcast, you should be able to pick it up. With that, we go into my traditional opening, which is, first of all, to send greetings, which I have now already done. And much love from the captain's chair to all of those places, all of those ships and all of those stations, all of those aircraft in the air, and the people who command them and the people who man them. And the second thing is always to talk about the binnacle list. And what seems to me be happening is that with the sun, and we have had just glorious days here in the Pacific Northwest once we got through a particularly hot spell, and with the ability to remove masks and to be able to touch hands with those we love, to be able to hug and touch, all of these things seem to me to be having people who are on the binnacle list leave it in only the best way. So as always, though, for those who remain on the binnacle list for all of the many different reasons that people are put on the list, it is my wish, my hope, and my command that you do all of the things that you're supposed to do so that you join all of the rest of us when it is time to fall in for quarters. One of the things that is happening right now is that it is once again time to help financially support the Voice of Vashon. And to that end, our Kate, our executive director, has organized a raffle, which is including a shopping spree. I've got the poster right across from me, right here on the other side of the lovely Susan, who is almost blocking it up for me. The poster, which says, win a Vashon Thriftway shopping spree. And you can win this by buying raffle tickets. And I'm looking at my notes here. The raffle tickets are $20 U.S. a piece or five for $80. So you may say, Captain Joe, from the captain's chair, that seems to be a little bit pricey. But should you win this spree, then you get to go into Thriftway, our local high-class market, and you run around the store and you collect as much stuff as you can get into the trolley. And so it is worth it. And of course, it's worth it only if you live on the magical Isle of Vashon. So you can go on to the voiceofvashon.org and figure out how you can buy your raffle tickets. And when I go back to Captain's Quarters, I will be doing just that. A couple of things I want to get caught up on, because not only were we not able to archive last week, but I had Charlotte, my friend who is also the producer for the theater festival, which is going to be held the end of this month. And so I didn't get to a number of things, and so I'm going to do a little bit of catching up. And the first one is that in the last week, I had some young people come from the State Department of Natural Resources, and they are young scientists who use my beach access to get to sensors that they have on Puget Sound to monitor the health of the sound. And of course, the health of the sound means that the food chain, which is in the sound, which works its way all the way up to humans with stops, with liberty calls in the smelt, eelgrass, then smelt, then salmon, then orca. And of course, humans catch the salmon. And so the health of the sound, one of the indicators of the health of the sound is the health of these various constituents that swim or breathe or live in the sound. And I've been able, my small part in this is to give them beach access through my property. And so there was a group of them on this last week. And I was struck by, first of all, their youthful enthusiasm and energy. And secondly, by, as we discuss and as we talk together, what seems to me to be a very high level of intellectual curiosity and, what's equally important, intellectual integrity. I always come away from talking with these people with a sense of hope that we are headed in the right direction with at least this particular group. Now, it is customary in the state of Washington to denigrate organizations like the Department of Natural Resources. And all I have to say about that is that this particular group of people are wonderful young people, and they are doing, so far as I can tell, I'm not intellectually or by training or education able to judge very much their particularly scientific skills, but I am in a position to judge their people skills, and they do just fine by me. And they like Sailor as well. So Sailor's been invited to go with them as they go down to do their sampling. But so far, he has not accepted that invitation. But these are lovely young people, and in fact, we have now expanded this, and we're going to be working with a group of people in the state fisheries end of state government, and that are working with suppressing and then hopefully eliminating some invasive species that are getting into the Puget Sound. All of this is to say that these are lovely people, lovely young people. They are going at these things, in my opinion, not so humble opinion, in my opinion, the right ways, and they are a great asset to all of us who live on Puget Sound. Another sign of hope and good things happening came to me just in the last couple of days, and we have discussed before not my addiction to YouTube, but my occasional trawling through the nets of YouTube is the way I'm going to put that. And so And I am mystified as to how some things show up on my particular YouTube collection on my computer. So one of them showed up, and the title of that one was U.S. Coast Guard Haddock Tour. That's the title of the YouTube clip. If you go into it, haddock, of course, is a ship, is a fish, and that is the name of the Coast Guard cutter, Haddock, and all of the vessels in that particular class are named for sea creatures. So U.S. Coast Guard cutter Haddock. She's homeported in San Diego, which is where I had my first command at sea. And she's commanded by, as was I at the time, a lieutenant junior grade, an O2, in my first command at sea. And this is a young lady who is the captain of the Coast Guard cutter Haddock. So the Coast Guard cutter Haddock is 87 feet long and a much more complex little ship than my 95-footer when I was her captain also in San Diego. So the other thing that struck me about this is that the captain herself was the one that was giving the tour. And she is the only officer, as was I, the only officer. And she has two chief petty officers, one as her XO and one as her engineering officer. And as she gave the tour, she took us all through her command. And there were two things that struck me. First of all, her knowledge of the systems that had been built into her command. Now, most commanding officers, especially of very complex ships, depend on the technicians that are part of their ship's company to maintain and to operate the systems for which they are responsible and accountable. This young lady had a really good grasp of the systems in her command. The other thing that struck me was that this little ship was absolutely immaculate. There was not a single bit of rust showing on her anywhere. And clearly, maybe she had been titivated to get ready for this particular clip. I would not be surprised if that were the case. But I have I've commanded six different Coast Guard cutters, and I have had a number of others under my command when I was a commander up in the Great Lakes. And I know how to inspect a ship, and I know what to look for, and I know and can tell. Just as soon as I go aboard a ship, within 30 seconds, I can tell you the overall material condition of that particular ship. And I can come pretty close to the overall morale condition of that ship, too, as well. So I could tell that this particular ship, her first command, was immaculately maintained, and that level of maintenance went all the way down to the very fundamentals of the ship, this little 87-foot ship. One of the things that she had in this particular ship was an arrangement for launching and recovering the small boat through a ramp in the stern. I think I would have to watch that being done a few times to be convinced that it was better than the system with which I'm familiar, in which I am personally qualified. But in any case, the impression that this young captain left with me was that, without going into overall generalities for the entire Coast Guard fleet, that the Coast Guard cutter Haddock was being commanded by a very competent young captain. I wish her, all of the crew, and the ship herself, all of the good things that happen when you take your crew to sea, and when we do it in small ships in very deep waters and in heavy weather, and this little ship was designed for that. So when you take her to sea and you, an officer of probably no more than 2 years commissioned experience plus 4 years at the academy, that you are just as responsible and just as accountable for that crew and for that mission accomplishment as is the captain of the aircraft carrier Gerald Ford. Only scale is different. Responsibility, accountability is the same. So, Captain, I wish you well. I think you've got a really good grip on that command, and I am confident that the Coast Guard cutter Haddock under your command is going to thrive. Well done. The book this week is has a little background story to it, and so this is the background story. I have been, over the last several weeks, I've been involved with an author who has written a book about a physician who was assigned to a Coast Guard icebreaker in the Antarctic. His name is Dr. Robert Bunas, and he wrote a book called Wind, Fire, and Ice. And it is the story of a deployment that he made with the Coast Guard cutter Glacier to the Weddell Sea, and how they almost came to grief not very far away from the place where Sir Ernest Shackleton lost Endurance. So it was in this exchange of correspondence with Dr. Bunas that I recommended some further reading to him. One of the books that I recommended to him was South by Sir Ernest himself. And another one was another book that we've discussed here, The Worst Journey in the World by Apsley Cherry Garrard, that wonderful hyphenated English name. By the way, in that book, The Worst Journey in the World by Apsley Cherry Garrard, is the only account of which I'm aware of the finding of Robert Scott's body. So the other book that I recommended to him is the one which is our book for this week. And the title of it is I May Be Sometime. And the author is a gentleman by the name of Francis, F-R-A-N-C-I-S, a male version, Spufford, S-P-U-F-F-O-R-D, Sierra Papa, Uncle, Fox, Uniform, Foxtrot, Foxtrot, Oscar, Romeo, Delta. And so I looked at Spufford's biography, and he was doing the final work on this book at the Scott Polar Research Institute the same time that I was completing the Shackleton Memorial Library. And so some of the photographs that are in the book came from Spry, and he got a lot of help from William Mills, who was at that time the librarian and the keeper of the collections. I read his biography as it's laid out in the book, but I have not looked him up in other places, but it is my impression that he himself has never been on the ice. And if I turn out to be wrong, in that I will so acknowledge in a later broadcast. The title, of course, comes from the statement that Captain Oates made when he left Scott and the rest of the party in the tent and walked out into the snow, into the blizzard, to give the rest of them a chance at life. And as he went out into the blizzard, he said to Scott and to the rest of them, I may be sometime. And this is the title that Spufford uses, and the subtitle is Ice and the English Imagination. Now, I'm not going to get into a criticism of Francis' book in terms of style or even fact-checking or anything like that. I'm going to leave all of those things to those of you who find the book and then read it. But what it does do is talk about a subject which is discussed at the Institute fairly frequently, and that is the Victorian attitudes towards such explorations. And in particular, he draws some comparisons between or among Shackleton, Amundsen, and Scott. He is not gentle with Scott. And in particular, he is over laudatory with Shackleton. But if you are interested in not only in the ideas of why people did these things, in particular during the Victorian era with the way that they did, but also some of the of a very extensive bibliography. When I read a book and it's in a field in which I have some knowledge or some particular area of expertness, I always look at the bibliography. And Francis did a really good job with this one. He's covered a lot of people and a lot of information. So I recommend the book. I do not accept some of the things that he writes about. But then, of course, I am a creature of the University of Cambridge. I am a creature of the Scott Poor Research Institute. And I take issue with some of the things that he has said. You may not, but it is certainly worth reading. And it is a fairly obscure title. And in terms of polar work, Francis is a fairly obscure author. So only here from the captain's chair can you get and be directed to such things as I may be sometime. Francis Spufford, S-P-U-F-F-O-R-D. The magazine this week is just came in my post yesterday. It is Seaways, which is the July issue of Seaways, which is the international journal of the Nautical Institute. The Nautical Institute, again, is the organization which is headquartered in London, not very far from the International Maritime Organization near Blackfriars Bridge, and is an organization addressed particularly to those who command at sea and those who manage those who command at sea. The article that is of particular interest for me is one that we'll talk about a little bit more. The big lead article is one called Fit for Command, Tools for the Job. And, of course, I have lots of opinions about that. I rendered some of them in my talk about the young captain in the Coast Guard cutter Haddock. But the article that I'm going to talk about right now is one of having to do with helicopter operations, in particular helicopter operations working around merchant vessels. And what they are doing is selling a new book. The title of the book is Guide to Helicopter Ship Operations, 5th edition. And it talks about how merchant ships can more safely work around helicopters and how helicopters can work more safely around merchant ships. And that reminds me that not too long ago, I got an offering for some training that I might want to take. And that training is at Maine Maritime Academy. And it is the title of the course is Helicopter Egress Training. And what they do is that they put you into this helicopter cockpit, helicopter cabin mock-up. Then they put you in the water. Then they turn this thing upside down, and you have to get yourself out. It seems to me, when I was on flight orders as the captain in Northwind, I had a considerable amount of helicopter training so that I could get the machine down, not on the deck, but on the ice, if something had happened to my aircraft commander sitting in the right seat. But I never had the thrill of doing the helicopter egress training, where you get put into this frame. You get belted into the frame, harnessed into the frame, and then you have to get yourself out. So I've missed that. But having now been offered that opportunity, should my travels find me in Maine, near Maine Maritime Academy, I might present myself for that particular piece of training. Speaking of traveling around, next week I will be in Port Huron, Michigan, for a reunion of Coast Guard people who are in particular up in the Great Lakes. And I'm going to do my broadcast from the reunion. I have organized it with Truman, with Captain O'Brien, he will engineer for me, and we're going to have some of my people, some of Captain Joe's people from the Coast Guard reunion. And this particular reunion is especially to recognize the circumnavigation of the North American continent by the Coast Guard cutters Storrs, Bramble, and I will think of the third one in just a minute. So, the Coast Guard cutter Healy is going to replicate that circumnavigation spar. That was the third one, Bramble, Spar, and Storrs. None of them now in commission. And Healy, later on this year, is going to replicate that circumnavigation. And the reunion began to memorialize that and to recognize that how many years ago that it was done, and especially because many of the people who manned those three ships have either crossed their bar or are pretty fragile, and the organizers wanted to get them together. In some cases, this will be the last time. I assure you that it is not your Captain Joe's last time, because I'm also scheduled to go to Key West in September for the reunion of my Ingham crew, Ingham for whom I am the senior surviving captain. So next week I will be broadcasting live, unscripted, unrehearsed, with some Coast Guard people who will be equally unscripted and unrehearsed, and I will take with me the list of the six words that we are not allowed to say, and make sure that they're all briefed on that before we get started on the broadcast. Far too quickly, once again, we are at the end of my time. I didn't get to nearly as much. I think if I were a little bit less wordy on some of these things, I might get to more pieces. But you take me as I am. That's the way it sometimes shakes out. So, everybody who is responsible and accountable for somebody else, know that my respect, regard, and affection for all of you remains, as always, at the highest level. It is my wish and my hope and my command that each of you watch out for the six. That's an old aviator's term. You watch out for the six of those for whom you are responsible. And as you are starting now to travel safely, one hand for yourself and one hand for the ship is just as applicable when you are on the road as it is anyplace else. And so, as we always do, we say never say goodbye, but this is your captain up in the captain's chair on station and watching properly, and next week I'll be watching properly from Point Huron.